Welcome to Washington Today on C-SPAN Radio for Friday, March 26, 2021. Here are some of your headlines. Two separate groups of lawmakers, House Democrats and Senate Republicans, visiting the U.S.-Mexico border, offering starkly different solutions on how to handle the surge of unaccompanied children crossing in recent weeks. President Joe Biden calling Georgia's new voting reform law, just signed by the governor Thursday night, calling it Jim Crow in the 21st century and saying it must end. On the coronavirus, Dr. Anthony Fauci, the president's chief medical advisor, skeptical of an opinion by former CDC director Dr. Robert Redfield that the COVID-19 virus escaped from a laboratory in China. And Senator Mitt Romney named this year's recipient of the John F. Kennedy Profiles in Courage Award for being the only Republican to vote to convict former President Donald Trump in the first impeachment trial. From USA Today, groups of lawmakers are at the U.S.-Mexico border Friday as the Biden administration continues to come under fire by both Republican and Democrats for the influx of migrants at the southern border. Senators Ted Cruz and John Cornyn, both of Texas, leading a group of more than a dozen Republican senators to the Rio Grande Valley in Texas. That area is seeing some of the largest numbers of migrants crossing into the United States. Separately, Congressman Joaquin Castro, Democrat of Texas, leading a group of Democratic House members on a tour of the Carrizo Springs, Texas Temporary Influx Facility for Children that's being run by the Department of Health and Human Services. That's all from USA Today. Both lawmakers holding news conferences. We start with Congressman Castro.
I think all of us would agree that the pictures that we've seen at the CBP facilities, as they've often been now and in the past, are horrendous, and that nobody should be kept in those conditions. Those are awful conditions. That even these facilities that have better conditions than the CBP processing centers are not the places for kids. That kids should be moved quickly along to their family sponsors. So we were here today to check on the status of the children. We had a chance to have conversations with them. There are folks that were from Guatemala, Nicaragua, El Salvador, many of the places in Central America. They told us a little bit about their journeys and about their lives. Most of them have family members here that they're trying to get to while they have their asylum claims processed. We also had very good discussions with the leadership of this facility, BCFS out of San Antonio, about practical recommendations for the Biden administration to speed up the process by which asylum claims are considered so that people don't have to wait either in these facilities, but most certainly in the CBP facilities that we've seen pictures of again recently. And so we're here today to find solutions. We're here today to go back to Washington and offer recommendations for how this process can be improved, how the asylum process can be improved, and people's human rights can be respected. And so we came away today with the feeling that we have something to share with the administration. The administration also visited here a few weeks ago. There have been other delegations, both Republican and Democrat, that have come through here. But most of all, our focus is on a solution to this issue. We're glad to see that the administration, the Biden administration, is building up the capacity to handle kids, the kids who have presented themselves for asylum. Y'all have probably heard that there's going to be at least one facility, if not two facilities, in San Antonio, also a facility at the Dallas Convention Center, and another one in California, in San Diego, perhaps in other places. But again, the ultimate goal is to get kids into the safest place, which is with family sponsors, so that they can have their asylum claims processed.
Congressman Joaquin Castro of Texas, with a delegation of other House Democrats at the Federal Health and Human Services Facility for Children in Carrizo Springs, Texas. Meanwhile, Republican senators led by Ted Cruz of Texas toured a Customs and Border Protection facility in Donna, Texas, then took a boat tour of the border near Mission. After they got off the boat, they held a news conference. Here's Senator Cruz.
You know, as we stand by the banks of the Rio Grande, we have an army of TV cameras here. It is striking that not a single one of these cameras is allowed in the Donna facility. We requested that media accompany us in the facility. The Biden administration said no. The Trump administration had allowed media inside facilities like that. The Obama administration allowed media inside facilities like that. The George W. Bush administration had. The Bill Clinton administration had. But the Biden administration wants to hide what is going on here. Not only that, but a number of us took pictures and took videos because the American people have a right to know what is happening here. And the Biden administration sent down political handlers to try to keep silent, to try to keep the American people not knowing what's going on. The Donna facility is a giant tent city. Built with a capacity of 250, it has nearly 4,000 people in it. We saw cages after cages after cages of little girls, of little boys, lying side by side, touching each other, covered with reflective emergency blankets. There was no 6-foot space, there was no 3-foot space, there wasn't a 3-inch space between the children lined up one after the other after the other. And children as young as infants, we saw playpens with infants and toddlers playing. We also saw a group of children who just today tested positive for COVID-19. The Donna facility alone reports roughly 10% of the individuals being held there are testing positive for COVID-19. Rates dramatically higher than the U.S. population, and the Biden administration is taking people who are testing positive for COVID-19 and locking them in cages side by side. This is inhumane, it is wrong, and it is the direct consequence of policy decisions by the Biden administration to stop building the wall, to return to catch and release, and to end the stay in Mexico policy.
Senator Ted Cruz with fellow Republican senators, news conference on the banks of the River Mission, Texas, today. U.S. Health and Human Services Department says there are over 16,000 migrant children in federal custody. The House and Senate, by the way, are on recess for the Passover and Easter holidays, returning in a couple of weeks. Now to the coronavirus response. Associated Press reports Chinese officials briefed diplomats Friday on the ongoing research into the origin of COVID-19 ahead of the expected release of a long-awaited report from the World Health Organization. A Chinese foreign ministry official says our purpose is to show our openness and transparency. China fought the epidemic in a transparent manner and has nothing to hide. But Dr. Robert Redfield, former director of the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, telling CNN today he believes the virus came from a Chinese laboratory.
If I was to guess, this virus started transmitting somewhere in September, October in Wuhan.
September, October.
That's my own view. It's an only opinion. I'm allowed to have opinions now. You know, I am of the point of view that I still think the most likely etiology of this pathogen in Wuhan was from a laboratory. Escaped. Other people don't believe that. That's fine. Science will eventually figure it out. It's not unusual for respiratory pathogens that are being worked on in a laboratory to infect a laboratory worker.
Former CDC Director Dr. Robert Redfield on CNN. Some reaction from Dr. Anthony Fauci and current CDC Director Dr. Rochelle Walensky during today's White House COVID-19 response team briefing.
When you think about the possibilities of how this virus appeared in the human population, obviously there are a number of theories. The issue that would have someone think it's possible to have escaped from a lab would mean that it essentially entered the outside human population already well adapted to humans, suggesting that it was adapted in the lab. However, the alternative explanation, which most public health individuals go by, is that this virus was actually circulating in China, likely in Wuhan, for a month or more before they were clinically recognized at the end of December of 2019. If that were the case, the virus clearly could have adapted itself to a greater efficiency of transmissibility over that period of time, up to and at the time it was recognized. So Dr. Redfield was mentioning that he was giving an opinion as to a possibility. But again, there are other alternatives, others that most people hold by.
And we are looking forward to a WHO report that should be coming out soon that examines the origin of this pandemic and of SARS-CoV-2 in humans, and we'll look forward to reviewing that.
Doctors Rochelle Walensky and Anthony Fauci at today's virtual White House coronavirus briefing. A WHO team has previously said a theory that the virus escaped from a lab is extremely unlikely, instead suggesting the virus went from a bat to another animal and then jumped to humans. White House today also announcing that Johnson & Johnson will deliver at least 11 million doses of its coronavirus vaccine next week, and the company will be hitting the goal of 20 million total doses delivered to the U.S. by the end of this month. And also Pfizer and Moderna are on track to meet their goals for the end of the month. Pfizer, 120 million doses. Moderna, 100 million doses. This is Washington Today. Boulder, Colorado Police Chief Maris Herold saying that investigators have still not identified a motive for why a suspect opened fire in a supermarket this week, killing 10 people. And reports today are that suspect passed a background check when he bought an AR-15-style gun at a local store 6 days before the massacre. Joining the police chief at today's news conference, Boulder County District Attorney Michael Daugherty, getting questions about that gun.
Michael, can you say anything or give us any insight about any possible further review of the gun purchase that was made at the Eagles Nest Armory in Urbana by the suspect?
As the chief indicated in her remarks, the suspect is believed to have used an AR-556 pistol that was purchased legally in Arvada, Colorado. He was also in possession of a 9mm handgun, and at this point in time, it's not believed that that was used during the incident. The ATF and FBI have done a tremendously thorough investigation into the guns that he had on him that day, as well as other firearms that might be connected to him, and that investigation is ongoing.
What about the magazine?
So I've spoken loud and clear over the years since becoming district attorney about the need for us to reduce gun violence in Colorado and throughout the United States. And at this point in time, those discussions and real action needs to continue. I'm going to remain very focused on this case. It is my primary focus. And today we stand just a few days after this mass shooting, and I'm going to keep the victims and their loved ones and the successful prosecution of this case as my focus.
Michael Daugherty, Boulder County, Colorado District Attorney. Associated Press explains that Colorado has a universal background check law covering almost all gun sales, but misdemeanor convictions generally do not prevent people from purchasing weapons. And if this suspect had been convicted of a felony, his gun purchase would have been prohibited under federal law. A bipartisan group of 26 governors issuing a joint statement today condemning rising violence against the Asian American community, part of a call for a National Day of Action and Healing. And this is just over a week after shootings at spas in the Atlanta area left 8 people dead, 6 of whom were Asian women. Authorities still investigating if race played a role in that shooting. Congresswoman Judy Chu, chair of the Congressional Asian Pacific American Caucus, spoke about all this today on Washington Post Live.
I would like to ask everybody to participate in this National Day of Action and Healing to speak out against Asian hate. Everybody can do it from their home or they can join a rally. We ask that they do a tweet, a post, a virtual conversation, an in-person event, and then stream that on the hashtag Stop Asian Hate. And you can find out more information on how to participate on www.AsianAmericanDayOfAction.com. What we wanted with this is to have an echo across all of the United States that people are standing up against this hate, that they want us to come together and join forces and be able to welcome everybody of every ethnic background to this country. So please be a participant in this speak out. Actually, already there have been so many rallies, so many events just over the past few days, and there are quite a few for today from coast to coast in every state. We hope that this is indeed a wake-up call to Asian Americans and actually to the nation that this must stop, that we can all do our part. And we're also putting out the message that if you are AAPI and you are the victim of a hate crime or hate incident, please report it on the Stop AAPI website. It's important for you to make sure that it is dealt with and there are resources there.
Democratic Congresswoman Judy Chu of California, today's discussion hosted by The Washington Post. And the group Stop AAPI Hate says almost 3,800 hate incidents against Asians and Asian Americans have been recorded in the past year, a majority targeting women. Washington Today continues in a minute. Welcome back to Washington Today. A few more headlines. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi appointing Washington, D.C. National Guard Major General William Walker to be the next House Sergeant at Arms. She noted in the announcement that he will be the first Black American to serve in that role. A majority House vote is required for this appointment to be effective. President Joe Biden nominating the wife of Senator Joe Manchin, Gail Connolly Manchin, as federal co-chair of the Appalachian Regional Commission. And Dominion Voting Systems filing a $1.6 billion lawsuit against Fox News, claiming that the network pushed baseless conspiracy theories that the 2020 election was stolen from former President Trump in order to increase ratings. Well, on elections, the White House now responding to that new Georgia voting law. In a moment, we'll hear from the press secretary, Jen Psaki, and from President Biden. First, Georgia's Republican Governor Brian Kemp, as he signed the bill Thursday night.
According to them, if you support voter ID for absentee ballots, you're a racist. According to them, if you believe in protecting the security and sanctity of the ballot box, you're a, quote, Jim Crow in a suit and tie, end quote. I've fought these partisan activists tooth and nail for over 10 years to keep our elections secure, accessible, and fair. Like before, I'm sure they will threaten, boycott, sue, demonize, and team up with their friends in the national media to call me everything in the book. But fighting for free and fair elections is worth all of that and more. Standing up for the constitutional rights of all Georgians is part of the oath I took as your governor. And you have my word, I will continue to uphold that oath.
Georgia Governor Brian Kemp in Atlanta Thursday evening signing that bill, the new law already being challenged in court. Friday afternoon, reporters questioning the White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki.
Georgia signed into law new restrictions on voting. President Biden has expressed his moral outrage over that. There's legislation in Congress, but does the administration plan to take any executive actions or file any lawsuits opposing these new laws?
Well, the administration has taken executive actions on voting rights, and of course we will continue to review options in that regard. I will say we expect to have a statement from the president on this voting law that passed in Georgia. He's worried about how this initiative sets in place preventing states to bring water to people standing in line waiting to vote, deciding to end voting at 5 o'clock when working people are just getting off of work, making it more challenging, not easier to vote, deciding that there will be no absentee ballots under the most rigid circumstances. Like the late Congressman John Lewis said, there's nothing more precious than the right to vote and speak up. And the president certainly believes that. There are pieces of legislation, as you noted, but that he is watching closely, that he will be engaging with members of Congress on, including the For the People Act and the John Lewis Voting Rights Advancement Act, to make it easier for all eligible Americans to vote, to have access to the ballot box, and to prevent attacks on the sacred right to vote. I'll also note that when he was in Georgia just 2 weeks ago, he met with Stacey Abrams while he was there, and he will also continue to encourage and engage with outside leaders and activists on steps they can take. Obviously, there's a range of groups and organizations that may take legal action that will be leading in activism. Some of that is going to be more appropriate from outside of the White House.
The White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki during her daily briefing. President Biden did put out a statement later Friday, reading in part, "This law, like so many others being pursued by Republicans in state houses across the country, is a blatant attack on the Constitution and good conscience. This is Jim Crow in the 21st century. It must end." President Biden also speaking briefly with reporters as he left the White House.
Are you a comment on the new Georgia election law, Mr. President?
Say again?
The new Georgia election law?
It's an atrocity. The idea, if you want any indication that it has nothing to do with fairness, nothing to do with decency, they passed a law saying you can't provide water for people standing in line while they're waiting to vote. You don't need anything else to know that this is nothing but punitive, designed to keep people from voting. You can't provide water for people about to vote. Give me a break.
And what are you going to do about it, Mr. President?
President Joe Biden on the White House lawn earlier Friday. He's also urged Congress to pass two Democratic-led voting rights bills. Just 4 months into 2021 and the 2024 presidential race has begun. We heard President Biden on Thursday say he expects to run for re-election. And one potential Republican candidate, former Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, was the featured speaker at a breakfast hosted today by the Westside Conservatives Club in Urbandale, Iowa. Iowa has been the traditional first state to hold presidential caucuses. One of the topics the former secretary brought up, immigration.
The work that I had the privilege to do these last 4 years mattered an awful lot. I'll give you a good example that I spent a fair amount of time talking about but was ignored a little bit. I spent a lot of time with my Mexican counterpart, Foreign Minister Marcelo Ebrard, and the President of Mexico, Mr. Obrador, President Obrador. We worked diligently to set up a system at our southern border that worked. What do I mean by that? It worked. It protected American sovereignty. It increased the probability that we knew if there were guns or drugs or cartels or human trafficking coming across our border. It was humane. It convinced people in desperate situations sometimes in places like Guatemala or El Salvador or Honduras not to make the trek. And then finally, if someone had a legitimate asylum claim, we resolved it. But we did it while they weren't here. We did it while they weren't inside of our country in a way that was unlawful. And that was hard work. It was complicated work. But President Trump was committed to it. He sent me down to work on it along with a team. And we delivered a really good outcome for the United States. And you can see what happens when somebody willy-nilly, without any thought, undoes it. This is an enormous challenge, enormous crisis we face on our southern border today. I hope they will rethink it. I hope they didn't undo it just because it was the Trump-Pompeo policy and that they have a plan. This is, you see the kids that traffic and women. I think the number of those who are assaulted sexually coming up from the south to the north is on the high side of 30%. This is a tragedy, and we had stopped it. We had made a real dent in this. We had made the right decision for America. We had put America first, and we got it right.
Mike Pompeo, former Secretary of State and former Congressman from Kansas, possible presidential candidate in 2024, today at a conservative club breakfast in Urbandale, Iowa. He was asked by a member of the audience whether it was time for a third West Point graduate to be president. The other two, General Ulysses S. Grant and General Dwight D. Eisenhower, Pompeo responding, "General Eisenhower was a great Kansan. That's my answer." Some other possible 2024 Republican presidential candidates also planning trips to Iowa in the near future. Senators Rick Scott of Florida, Tim Scott of South Carolina, and Tom Cotton of Arkansas among them. Republican Senator Mitt Romney of Utah is getting this year's Profile in Courage Award from the John F. Kennedy Library Foundation. It's for being the only Republican to vote to impeach former President Donald Trump in the first impeachment trial. That's the one involving the president's effort to pressure Ukraine to investigate now President Joe Biden and his son Hunter's dealings in that country. Senator Romney and Caroline Kennedy were interviewed on NBC's Today Show.
Well, let me first start off, Peter, by noting that I'm very appreciative of the honor, but also humbled by it. In my case, we swore a different oath when the impeachment trial began. We swore under God that we would apply impartial justice. I took that very, very seriously. And I listened to the various testimonies that were provided, and I felt that that was a severe enough violation of his oath of office to require a guilty verdict.
Did you at any point worry that you might undermine the effectiveness of someone like Senator Romney or any Republican to be shining the Kennedy light on them?
Well, not everybody has the courage to accept this award, but we're grateful to the senator, and we feel that as a committee, we have to be courageous and call it like we see it. And certainly Senator Romney's example stood out.
There is some irony to this award being given to me. One, not just because of my own personal failings from time to time in my life, but number two, I had the occasion of running against Caroline Kennedy's uncle, and that's Ted Kennedy. And I've faced a much tougher barrage from him than I ever did from anybody in the in the airport. But we became very good friends as time went on. We were able to work together.
Senator Mitt Romney and Caroline Kennedy interviewed by NBC. The Profile in Courage Award was created by the family of the late President John F. Kennedy to honor public figures who risked their careers by taking unpopular positions for the greater good. It's named after Kennedy's 1957 award-winning book, Profiles in Courage. And each year, the winner is selected by a bipartisan panel of national leaders. On Wall Street today, the Dow was up 453, NASDAQ up 161, S&P up 65. A new Gallup poll says that 55% of Americans are worried about hunger and homelessness. That's up 8% from 2020 and the highest percentage on the issue in the last 20 years. Today, we're learning a bit more about what transportation tax increases may be offered by President Biden to pay for at least some of the $3 trillion infrastructure spending proposal that he's expected to unveil soon. Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg was interviewed on CNBC.
You've called it old-fashioned to raise the gas tax. Do you still believe that? Could that go up?
Well, the gas tax has traditionally been part of how we fund the Highway Trust Fund, but we know that it can't be the answer forever because we're going to be using less and less gas. We're trying to electrify the vehicle fleet. So if there's a way to do it that doesn't increase the burden on the middle class, we can look at it. But if we do, we got to recognize that's still not going to be the long-term answer.
What about a mileage-based tax?
So I think that shows a lot of promise. If we believe in that so-called user pays principle, the idea that part of how we pay for roads is you pay based on how much you drive, the gas tax used to be the obvious way to do it. It's not anymore. So a so-called vehicle miles traveled tax or mileage tax, whatever you want to call it, could be a way to do it.
Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg, again, the infrastructure proposal, $3 trillion expected. There might be other things in there besides infrastructure, and there might be offsets, tax increases, not officially unveiled yet by the Biden administration. That huge cargo ship still stuck sideways in the Suez Canal. It's over 1,300 feet, over 200,000 tons. It's been 3 days now, and about 200 other cargo ships are backed up waiting to get through. The U.S. has offered its assistance to Egypt to help free the ship, which is named the Ever Given. White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki asked today if the U.S. is concerned about the effect on the economy of the slowdown in trade.
How concerned is the U.S. about the blockage and its effect on global commerce, trade, goods getting to the U.S. and other places?
Well, we do see some potential impacts on energy markets from the role of the Suez Canal as a key bi-directional transit route for oil. And obviously, that's one of the reasons we offered assistance from the United States, and we are in close consultation with the Egyptians about that. We're going to continue to monitor market conditions and will respond appropriately if necessary, but it is something we're watching closely.
The White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki, the Suez Canal handles about 12% of sea trade, an average of 51 ships a day, and each day of a blockage disrupts more than $8 billion worth of goods. Thanks for joining us today. Download the free C-SPAN Radio app to listen to 4 live streams, not only C-SPAN Radio, but the 3 C-SPAN TV networks as well. And get Washington Today as a podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Hope you have a good night and weekend.